Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they get their hands on to incarcerate. And that's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
I'm
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And mess around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
All right. That's our morning motivation, and we're going to get more motivation here in a moment. Today we have a very special guest on here on It's My House. And today's podcast live stream is titled From Homeless to Medal Worker, not Medal Worker, Medal Winner. From Homeless to Medal Winner. And the call-in number is 619-768-2945. And our special guest is Ashton Smith, and she'll be speaking about From Homeless to what she's done with Special Olympics and other things. So good morning, Ashton.
Good morning to you, man, on this kind of good day out here in Texas. We did have storms roll through here, but other than that, brother, we are picking up steam and we rolling. How you doing?
Well,
after
good,
Sunday,
good.
Sir?
Texas is a big state, so it might be doing something
in
one
rich,
part of the
and
state.
We're rich and we flaunt it out here. They're rich,
yeah,
too.
Matter of fact, Texas is so big it can probably operate as its own independent nation. But in any event,
wow, okay.
Now, how did you go from homeless? Were you a medal winner before being homeless, or were you homeless first and then became a medal winner?
I was homeless. I was actually homeless. Excuse me. First,
okay.
I was homeless first, and it was tough. I'm not going to lie. You know, I'm a woman. My voice may not, unfortunately, sound like a woman, but that's okay. I call it God's blessing of a voice because at night people leave me alone. At 6'3", God has blessed me. People leave me alone. Being homeless, that also came into fruition, you know, having the height that I do and all of it, I would say, protected me as a woman going from place to place and trying to find your hopes and dreams within that and not giving up on yourself and learning how to overcome homelessness was your second question, and that is learning about the programs and what's around you, having a good network of people that you can count on. And that's one thing my grandmother taught me, you know, if you're not wealthy, you always need to make sure you have a good network of people. And I said, what does that mean? And she said, hey, man, if you need to go borrow some sugar, you can go down to your friend's house, go get some sugar, or et cetera. And so in life, you want to have people in this life that can help you out and can help you out of that situation. And I started studying federal programs and housing and better housing and started moving up within that program, even all the way up to the top of the ranking, even in public housing. I was able to get into beautiful tax credit properties with swimming pools, weight rooms. People don't know all this, right? There's literally a class of housing, right? And I was able to get to the top of the top of the top of the best, right? And so I always believed that if I could do that, I could get out of being homeless, right? And being able to articulate it and achieve the dreams of doing that, and I was able to do that by having also discipline, right? Learning how to manage money, right? If you have, God says, I'll bless you with this, right? If you can manage this small amount, paraphrasing, right? So if you have a small amount, God's blessed you with that. And if you can show that you can manage that, amen, then God will put you in control of other things to manage in your life outside of money. So budgeting money was very important for me to get out of homelessness. 100% money controls everything globally, and it is connected, and it helped me. Money and God, you know, money and God, because or however you want to arrange that, but having those two things and having faith and not giving up on yourself, that can really help you propel your life and putting yourself on a solid foundation. Amen.
Okay. All right. Now, did there are a lot of, homeless programs out there. Did you come across any of those?
I did, in fact. I came across many programs when I was at the Union Gospel Mission. I would go down there and eat. And sometimes I would go down there and eat, even though I didn't stay there. I might have stayed with someone else, but they had all these, this board, a big board, right? And it had all these different flyers each day, right, that you could go in there. Because not everybody, when you're homeless, you don't have the internet. So they would print out these flyers for people to rip off and choose. And one of the jobs that I pulled from the board was Jack Brown's. Jack Brown used to be a large, huge agency. They come pick thousands of people up and move them across Texas to go to different work and jobs. And so within those jobs and those opportunities, I was able to find flyers on housing, food programs. They had job fairs, stuff set up inside these massive warehouses. Some of them were the size of 8 football fields. Come on, this is Texas, right? We can move it. We can do it, right? And so at the end of the day, they said, if we can take the same space, right, and we can start putting job fairs in here, that will give people like me hope, and it did. I was able to get jobs at various places, and I was grateful for those jobs because those jobs forever changed my life. I was able to get jobs at various shipping companies and things like that, unloading trucks. Shout out to the Goodwill. I'll never forget what they taught me. And the black dude who used to manage me there, he said, at the end of the day, God will put you in a position to where someday you don't have to work here, right? And so at the end of the day, I believe that God will put me in position as I learn these programs and as I learn programs even like the home ownership program, things like that, that are for people who want to have a home here in Texas or federally. The home ownership program runs in all 50 states, and some governments may have it where you stay in the home for 5 years to 10 years and it's free and clear yours, all you do is pay the taxes, right? So anybody that sits there and tells you that you'll never own a house or you can't do that because you live on a fixed income, that's not true. The government has programs for people who live on fixed incomes where they say, okay, sit in this house for 10 years. That's how they get these people in here who have low incomes and things like that, and warranty programs that take care of appliances within the house. So if you're living on $1,000 a month, the government can say, hey, but I have a voucher for $1,500. Now you're working with something because you don't have to make three times the rent amount in a home. All you have to do is make that monthly payment. And once you know the structure of a monthly payment for a house, now those dreams begin to sit into reality because you've studied the programs that can help deliver that dream to you. And I qualify for a program like that out here in Texas where I can have a brand new house built, right? Because the government said what? You did what we asked you to do. And that means to stay in an apartment for 10 years and not go to jail, not get in trouble, not break the law. And if you can do that, then the government going to say, hey, we're going to move you up the rank, right? And they move you into home ownership and stuff like that. People think I'm joking, but it's very real out here, right? And Texas, it's very rich, and they have homestead laws out here because this is Texas, right? Most states have homestead laws, even states that may be like Delaware. You might have to move out of the city in order to qualify, and they will tell you that. You may have to move out of your city area in order to qualify for homestead exemption laws and things like that, okay? Because it's hard to homestead land that's already owned by the city and all that. So, yeah, I think that, you know, life can make us better when we begin to have these programs that offer resiliency and hope for everybody. And the home ownership program does that. And the Texas ABLE or ABLE.org also does that. These programs, folks can start to look up today and understand that these programs can help change their lives no matter what income or education, by golly, you have. You don't have to have a college education to even qualify for this stuff. You just have to have common sense and not go to jail. All right? Amen?
Okay. Now, with some of the homeless programs that you know about, because I know some, you know, well, that I've run across, like some, they feed you, quite a few feed you. And they have Bible study and something like that.
Right.
What else do some of the ones that you've run across offer? What are they generally about?
A lot of the programs, some of them are very different, though. You have some that offer work placement programs for people, like, similar to like a Job Corps, if anybody's ever heard of Job Corps, but this is, you know, more for adults. So they can offer a job placement. Some of them offer what they call on-site housing because Texas is big enough to do it. They can offer on-site housing for people at these shelters. And some of them, you have to go to religious services such as Christianity, Union Gospel Mission, and others, right? They have a mission, right? And they let you know in writing that our mission is to get you to God. Well, you got some folks that don't believe in God, so they ship you on down the street, right? And they'll tell you to go to a shelter where you can pay to stay. And that has nothing to do with religion. You can pay for a room or to stay there. So every program's different. You have programs that don't necessarily do work placement. They may deal with children and families where they help the whole, you know, a family of people that may be homeless. So you might have, for example, you know, I was helping somebody and, you know, and in my life, you know, I just say I help people. Because if, even though I'm not the richest person in the world, if I can help get you a bed and you're not sleeping in a car or sleeping outside, God forbid, then those are things that I know about. And these programs offer a spectrum of hope for people who say, I may not believe in God, but I still want to get off the streets. There are programs like that. The Salvation Army, Catholic Charities will also help you build and fix your credit. VITA will also help you do your taxes for free. VITA is a program that does your taxes for free. That's why I don't ever use H&R Block to do mine. Government has programs for that too, right? So at the end of the day, these are all programs that you can go and look up. $60,000, depending on the state you live in, for VITA services. VITA will do your taxes for those who make up to that amount. If you make over $60,000, then the government has a program for that, too, under AARP and other programs. And very beneficial, especially if you have Medicare, right? Medicare was another arm that helped me get off the streets, because Medicare then began to create a buttress, right, to get me proper medical services and things that I'm not having to pay for or clog up county hospitals. This is very important because county hospitals, at least in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, see more poor and black people or people of color generally end up in your local county hospitals or walk-in clinics because lack of resources, and this was studies done out here for the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And so the way that we change that is by giving people individualized health care options. This is my belief, because there are too many people out here homeless. And so and people who have what I call homeless insurance, meaning no one will take their insurance, right? Let's be 100. Or they're still relegated to go to the county hospital because of it. So what I felt like we should have done is made a stronger system where that those who are the lowest of the lowest of those can buy into a system or be covered if you cannot afford to buy, and then you create a slide and scale for those who still want to buy into Medicare. It would prop up Medicare. It'll pump in millions, if not trillions of dollars over time. Then Medicare can help protect its programs, and they'll be here for another 70 years if they do it like that and allow the public to start to buy into that program. It'll help prop up the homeless and those who, and it'll help open up those county hospitals for those who really need it, because that's what I saw when I was homeless. I was having to wait 6 hours for care. Let's be real, right? This is Dallas, Fort Worth. You're waiting for care, and that's unacceptable, and you see a person die on the floor, right, because they're waiting for care, and they're saying, my stomach hurts or whatever, but they can't get to them, right, because they got a dude down the hall with a gunshot. So who do you think they're going to help first? And that is the problem with our system, because we say, well, we got to help this dude over here that's got the gunshot, but we also need to make sure we have resources to also help the man over here that just died, right? So at the end of the day, these are things that have happened, and this is stuff that even when I was homeless, you would see, right? People would call for help, but because the area where it was at, help wasn't coming fast enough, right, because the area was really, it was a homeless area, and so it was like people didn't care about us. Help would come, but it wasn't like if you lived in a neighborhood or an apartment, right? If I need help here today, somebody's going to come, okay, amen? And so when you're homeless and you cry out for help, you're not going to get it. And so you see some of the most dangerous areas in Dallas-Fort Worth. You see areas like Las Vegas Trail and these areas. It's not fun. And it's not savory. And so you have to be able to offer hope to people by propping up the systems that they need, not only through tax dollars, but there are other ways. I told the government, man, if I was running the government, y'all would get sponsorships and stuff. Ain't no way I would just depend on taxes from the public. I would be in the business of getting my hands on any type of legal money that's operable to prop up the government. The government should start getting in business for itself and start, you know, all these rules I read, this is why homeless exists, because the government has too much red tape and it makes it so difficult. If the government could relax half of the rules they have, it would take half of the people off the streets in the United States. You have some 55 million Americans who depend on Social Security and disability. You can look that up yourself. It may be more because of the pandemic, but at the end of the day, these programs have to be propped up for another 70 years, and you can't do it alone with just taxing the mess out of people. You got to find other innovative ways like they do in Dubai in other countries to prop up the least of those, even if you have to use oil or other resources to help those who may not have. We have to find innovative ways to help the homeless. Would you agree with that, sir?
Yeah. Well, the local state and federal governments, they're basically all revenue collectors anyway. And every time one pops up, you know, they're I mean, like the regular, just the normal average homeowner, they're pouncing on them because, you know, if property taxes go to pay for various things, I mean, local governments have to pay for, they got a payroll to meet every 2 weeks. Then retirees, they got to pay every month. And then inflation is factored in. And then their expenses, like you take the homeowner today, compare them to the homeowner of 50 years ago, and their expenses that homeowners today pay that weren't paid 50 years ago.
That's because of greed. I think that structure's because of greed.
And all of that. And then it all depends on the city that you live in today. Now, if you go back 50 years ago in, let's say, a city like Dallas, Fort Worth, Houston, those places, L.A., New York, Chicago, whatever. You can have a house where the property taxes 50 years ago were probably under $500 for the whole year. Now, if you're in certain areas of Dallas, Houston, L.A., Chicago, Miami, your property taxes could be $1,000 to $5,000 a year. But, and a lot of your larger cities are really, in my opinion, really probably now is they're probably for the wealthier people in a community. And Texas is an interesting state. Like, for instance.
But you can undercut that, though, can't you, with the fact that even though I live in the heart of downtown, you know, here in downtown Fort Worth, but the government can always come in and always undercut the market because the government controls it. When the government said they wanted to build a tax income property, people were marching and they didn't want it. The government said, forget that. We don't care. We're going to build it through eminent domain. They leveled this stuff over here, and it's beautiful. And so I'm like, the government is going to do what it wants to do. Right? If they tell you they're going to put a train line through here, they're going to do that. They don't care about the rich people on the hill over here that, we don't want it. Because for years, black folks, at least out here in Texas, have had issues with drinking water. Some communities don't have running water. Let's keep it 100. And those are serious issues. And Texas is an interesting state because it is very rich, but I have to keep it 100. There are parts of Texas that look like a bomb hit it. Like, it just, it's run down. And so that cannot happen. And we have to learn to, the government, people say, well, go vote. They don't help. Don't go vote. And my grandmother fought to vote. You know, she marched and marches and things like this. And people say that may not change anything. But with the media and things over time, I believe that marching and voting, it does change. You know, I've gotten help from different politicians, and you meet these politicians out here in Texas. Beto O'Rourke, okay, is a person trying to run, and others, you know, and the biggest thing people say, well, what can we do in Texas to help people? I believe if they legalized out here marijuana, right, then the taxes or whatever people use from that can help the poor, right? Because oil and gas companies are like, we're not donating to, you know, for that. But what if you came in, instead of having heavy property taxes, we lower the property taxes, right, and then we legalize something and keep it as a balance, right? So now that you have an even balance system where those homeowners who don't have, I've always said, that may not have the money to pay these taxes on their homes, then the government should create some type of system where these homeowners can get some kind of benefits, discount, vouchers. They spend money on everything else. Why
let me play something real quick, Because this relates to homelessness, homeowners, some of the issues we're talking about. Now, pay close attention to the very beginning of this as I play it.
My home is not for sale, and if my home isn't safe, nobody's home is safe.
What Jim Salit is talking about is the city of Lakewood, Ohio, taking his house, his home, through eminent domain to make way for a high-priced condo that will pay the city more in taxes than he and his wife Joanne do. And he says he's not going to take it lying down.
It's the close-knit, beautiful neighborhood. It's what America's all about. And I'm going to fight them tooth and nail. I've just begun to fight.
I'm Mike Wallace.
I'm Morley Safer.
I'm Ed Bradley.
I'm Steve Croft.
I'm Leslie Stahl. Those stories and Andy Rooney tonight on 60 Minutes.
Just about everyone knows that under a process called eminent domain, the government can and does seize private property for public use to build a road or a courthouse. But did you know the government can also seize your land for private use if they can prove that doing it will serve what is called the public good? Cities across the country have been using eminent domain to force people off their land so that private developers can build more expensive homes and offices, which will pay more in property taxes than the buildings they are replacing. Under eminent domain, the government buys your property, paying you what is determined to be fair market value. But now, people who don't want to sell their homes at any price just to see their land go to another private owner are fighting back.
The bottom line is, this is morally wrong, what they're doing here. This is our home, and we're going to stay here, and I'm going to fight them tooth and nail. I've just begun to fight.
Jim and Joanne Salit are refusing to sell the home they've lived in for 38 years in a quiet neighborhood of single-family houses in Lakewood, Ohio, just outside Cleveland. The city of Lakewood is trying to use eminent domain to force the Salits out to make way for more expensive condominiums. But the Salits are in effect telling the town, hell no, they won't go.
We talked about this when we were dating. I used to point to the houses and say, Joanne, one of these days we're going to have one of these houses. And I meant it. And I worked hard.
What'd you do?
I worked in the pharmaceutical industry. And we worked very hard for this and paid it off. And we said, oh, we've got it. We paid off our home. I retired. And now we're going to spend the rest of our days here and pass this on to our children.
But Lakewood's mayor, Madeline Kane, has other plans. She wants to tear down the Salits' home, plus 55 homes around it, along with four apartment buildings and more than a dozen businesses, so that private developers can build high-priced condominiums and a high-end shopping mall, and thus raise Lakewood's property tax base.
This is a project.
The mayor told us she sought out a developer for the project because Lakewood's aging tax base has been shrinking and the city simply needs more money.
This is about Lakewood's future. Lakewood cannot survive without a strengthened tax base. Is it right to consider this a public good? Absolutely.
What you're saying effectively is that the Salits neighborhood has to be sacrificed for the greater good of the city of Lakewood.
I guess I'm saying that that neighborhood is being asked to, and it's difficult and it's unfortunate that they are being asked to give up their home.
They want this whole area because of the view of the park.
Well, it's a beautiful view.
It is an awesome view. They know it's gorgeous and they want it. It's that simple.
This whole area is called Scenic Park, but that's the problem. Because it is so scenic, it's a prime place to build upscale condominiums. With great views over the Rocky River, those condos will be a cinch to sell. But the condos can't go up unless the city can remove the Salits and their neighbors through eminent domain. And to legally invoke eminent domain, the city had to certify that this scenic park area is really, quote, blighted.
We're not blighted. This is an area that we absolutely love. It's a close-knit, beautiful neighborhood. It's what America's all about. And, Mike, you don't know how humiliating this is to have people tell you you live in a blighted area and how degrading this is.
You're the mayor. You know the place. Tell me what is blighted about that area.
the term blighted is a statutory word. It really doesn't have a lot to do with whether or not your home is painted. It is a legal statutory term
meaning
that is used to describe an area. And the question is whether or not that area can be used for a higher and better use.
What does that mean, a higher and better use? What's higher and better than a home?
The term blight is used to describe whether or not the structures generally in an area meet today's standards.
And it's the city that sets those standards. So Lakewood set a standard for blight that would include most of the homes in the neighborhood. A home could be considered blighted if it doesn't have the following.
3 bedrooms, 2 baths, an attached 2-car garage, and central air. Now, this community is over 100 years old. Who has all those things?
You mean it's blighted if it doesn't have 3 bedrooms?
Those things I just told you. That's the criteria. And it's ridiculous.
You don't have central air?
No, and we don't need it because of the air. We always have a breeze.
Sure.
Right off Lake Erie, the breeze comes right through here all the time. We counted all the attached garages in Lakewood. There's 20 in the whole city.
We counted 20.
And by the way, we got up at a meeting and told the mayor and all 7 council members their houses are blighted according to this criteria.
My understanding is that using the criteria that are in place, more than 90% of the houses in Lakewood could be deemed blighted, including the houses of the mayor and of every one of the city council members. True? Do you have 2 bathrooms?
No.
Blight. 2-car garage?
No.
Blight. Is the garage attached?
No.
Blight. And your lot size is under 5,000 square feet?
Oh, well under.
You've called that area a cute little neighborhood. You didn't call it a cute little blighted neighborhood. I mean, you and I know that it's not a blighted neighborhood.
I would never personally walk that neighborhood and indicate that that neighborhood is not attractive or, I mean, I would never say that.
It's a cute little neighborhood.
It is a cute little neighborhood. You'll get me to say it on the record. It is a cute little neighborhood.
Cute, maybe, but without those new condos, it won't produce enough property taxes to satisfy the mayor and the city council.
That's no excuse for taking my home. My home is not for sale. And if my home isn't safe, nobody's home is safe in the whole country, not only Ohio, but this is rampant all over the country. It's like a plague.
This is a nation.
That interview on 60 Minutes took place over 40 years ago. And I would say one of the biggest creators of homelessness in the United States would be local governments. And that interview, that wasn't a whole interview, but these people, the full interview is go to YouTube, put in 60 Minutes Eminent Domain. Go to YouTube search engine and put in 60 Minutes Eminent Domain and then watch the whole interview in its entirety. But the Salites lived in a nice neighborhood in that part of Ohio. And as the mayor said at the time that, you know, it was a legal term. In other words, a lot of local cities are looking for ways to generate more revenue. And who do they go to repeatedly year after year, including still today in 2022? They go to the homeowner. And if the homeowner does not pay the new increased tax revenue or new fee that is, you know, at matter of fact, we go back 40 years ago. when this story was done on 60 Minutes. In many cities, if not all cities in the United States, there was no such thing as a sewage fee. Now in certain, a lot of cities in the United States, if you have the water shut off even, you still get billed on a monthly basis a sewage fee. So there's a lot of nickel and dime fees that a lot of your larger cities in the United States put on people, and they just simply can't afford to pay these nickel and dime fees that the local municipality has put on the average homeowner. And even if you're a renter, the landlord is going to pass off his increased cost coming from the municipal taxing authority. They're going to pass it off to the local person who's paying rent. Now, the solution for that is, in my opinion, get out of these larger cities, because the more comfort and the more conveniences that you have, like the closer you live to a Walmart, if you want that sidewalk, you know, that paved, if you want your street cleaned, if you want your trash picked up, if you want a recycle bin, if you want a bus route, if you want a subway, all of these are comfort and conveniences for a municipality. Do you want your water by just turning on a tap? That's very convenient. All right. My whole thing is get out of the city. And for instance, I'm in Florida right now. I've got land in Texas. We've got, 10 acres out there. I bought for $2,000. There are people that live in Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, Chicago, Boston, D.C., Miami, Orlando, San Francisco, Seattle, Washington, that pay $2,000 a month because they live in the city. Because they want the water convenient. They don't want to harvest water. But more than likely, they don't even know how to harvest water. So I think the big, and then a lot of the homeless programs, there might be some innovative ones out there I don't know about, but most, and whatever people do for the homeless is great. You know, Salvation Army, they have a program, they have men's dorms, they have women's dorms, and, you know, typically they'll let you in for 3 days rent-free, and then after the third day, you need to start paying rent. That rent could be $7, depends on the location. It could be $7 a day in some locations. It could be $15 a day in some locations. And typically there's a day labor truck that will come by early in the morning after they feed you breakfast, and then you can get on one of those day labor trucks, and then you can go out, and with day labor, you know, whatever they have you do with day labor. It could be cutting grass, hedges, painting some house, laying bricks, whatever it might be. And then you're earning the cash where you can pay the Salvation Army. And that works terrific for hundreds, if not thousands, of people over time. All right. However, when people move out within 3 months, 6 months, or a year or so, some of those people are repeat customers at various homeless programs like the Salvation Army or whatever. Okay. And I think, from my observation, the common denominator is, and this is what we'll be doing with It's My House, is we're opening up our own school titled Offshore Housing University. It's not an academic university. There's no paper test that you take or nothing like that. Our answer is, if you want to eliminate the problem of homelessness or affordable housing where credit ratings don't even matter, person, we believe in what the Amish do. Now, we're not Amish, we're not Mennonites. But in principle, the Amish and the Mennonites, I'm just using them as an example, they do something that's ancient from day one, is they teach people, or actually they know how to, they build their own houses. They don't get any mortgages. They don't go to the government. They just from father to son, from parents to children or daughters included, they teach people or in their community, it's within the family. So with Off-Grid Housing University, and let me just break that down, Off-Grid, we teach people that if you want to get it off the grid means you want to get off the government taxation as much as possible. Because if you're in a place like a Chicago, Cleveland, Ohio, you're on the grid. Somebody is paying, you know, more than likely you're, if you're paying rent or paying a mortgage, more than likely you're renting your water. And if you don't pay that water bill, they'll shut you off. You're renting your electricity. You don't pay that electric bill. So with off-grid housing, the operative word here is off-grid housing. We teach people how to build off-grid housing. And that's what the Amish and the Mennonite do. All right? I'm not saying we don't get into the religious aspect of it, but it's a strict, you know, if you know how to build a house, and you know how to harvest your own water, you know how to generate your own electricity using solar energy, wind energy, any type of renewable energy, all right, then you don't have to worry about a light bill. You don't have to worry about a water bill. You don't have to worry about a mortgage payment. All right, so these are some of the things we'll be doing at Off-Grid Housing University, which is we don't hand out any bachelor degrees. There are no certificates. There are no diplomas. The acid test is you get hands-on experience actually building a house that generates its own energy. All right. So that's what that's about. But that's my take on the while a lot of people, maybe not all people, but a lot of people, I think a lot of homelessness is created. And I'm not saying it's done on purpose. It's just it is what it is. It's that local governments are trying to find ways to generate more money, but they keep on going back to that homeowner or through eminent domain, let's get rid of that. And as Jim Salit said, if his house isn't safe, imagine, once again, watch that video on YouTube. Once again, go to YouTube, type in the YouTube search engine, 60 Minutes Eminent Domain. You'll see the whole thing, the visual on it. And you'll get to look at his house in this neighborhood. We're talking about a white picket fence neighborhood. Streets clean. Grass cut. Tulips in the yard. Okay, no poor people living in the neighborhood. And you have a lot of these major cities in the United States, and there are over 19,500 municipal cities in the United States. But I look for the smaller ones. I look for the little towns and little villages where you don't have to worry about eminent domain. In any event, but that's a root cause. So I don't, anyway, but that's a whole nother podcast. Hold on, let me get back to my guest here. So anyway, Ashton, hopefully you got something out of that video. Audio, really.
You know, audio, uh-huh. Yeah, I was listening to that, and I listen to the word called regentrified, or regentrification is the new age term that folks are using. And for me, I like it because when you look at the neighborhoods that were here before these properties came in through eminent domain, it was prostitution. It was a biker bar over here. A man got murdered over here, and they had to change the neighborhood. They were like, no, 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 no. So the regentrified, or that term, comes in, I feel, to uplift the place, right? Because if a place looks like a third world country, who in the world is going to want to build a multi-million dollar high rise over there, right, with stores and stuff? And I don't want to live in a food desert, right? So people say, if I live in the ghetto, right, look at Southern Dallas, right, and you're going to draw a red line from Southern Dallas, right, all the way to the north, shoot all the way up north, right, Farmers Branch, got all that northern stuff, right? And you look at the most impoverished part, same thing in Fort Worth or whatever you want to do in any major city, and you look at poverty rates versus what's built, right? What in the world's built in these communities? And you look at dollar stores, loan places. I think all of those things contribute to poverty and also not being healthy. I'm very physically in shape, so, you know, I don't have that problem. But you can become what you eat, right, or what you have access to is what my grandmother used to say, right? And at the end of the day, not everybody wants to live off of a grid, okay, because
Well, most people don't because they're addicted to it.
Well, I will be honest. I didn't like sleeping on the streets. I didn't like that. I didn't, you know, so I don't like not – I like it. I like having modern air conditioning. You can die out here in Texas. I don't want to live off the grid in Texas. I'm not trying to die.
Well,
no,
you can have
– I don't want to die.
You can have
– It's hot.
You can have every convenience that you want off-grid, too. Now, you won't have – now, granted, Kmart's not going to be –
I'm not hauling
the
water.
No, but you can have off-grid – there are off-grid water systems where the water is convenient to you. It's just you we'll be teaching people how to – once you have all this stuff set up, you have your own independent system where – you got your own water. You got your own electricity. Like I say, the houses that we teach people how to build generate their own power. Now, you can't
And all of that's great. But you know, the reason I like structures is because structures can put massive basements in them for tornadoes, reinforced steel. I all of that. And that's what my standards are when it comes to if I want a house and if I get a house, I want a basement put in the ground with reinforced steel, right? But if I'm trying to do that off the grid, that and pouring a foundation, all of that stuff for me, because I used to do demolition work, and I looked at the structure of buildings. And a lot of this stuff is supposedly off the grid, right? Because some of it I've had to demo. It's not built to standards. There's a way that I would want peer and beam steel foundations and stuff up the standards, because you're talking about winds, straight line winds can flatten your butt out here. And so you have to also be able to build structure that's resilient, because if you don't build structure that's resilient, no matter where it's built at, the city's going to come in there, or even if it's off-grid or whatever, there's environmental folks and all of this kind of stuff that can come in there and say, no, this needs to be built to grade or built to water grade, so you're not building on a floodplain. There's reasons that a lot of people don't want to go off the grid because of regulations and rules and all of this that the average person, I'm telling you, I don't want to deal with, because I've looked into that, right? Because the government said, we can offer you something better than off the grid. We could pay your – look, people worry about, hey, how am I going to pay all these bills? And the government has programs for that too, right? I don't, you know what I mean? Like, when you look at that and people say, well, I don't want to live in a city because it's expensive, or I don't want to stay here because it costs me money. Well, the government says, but I can have these things taken care of. Your water bill is taken care of. Because if you go to – see, this is the thing. The government provides classes for people through environmental stuff where they'll pay your water bill. If you have a house that needs to be weatherized, you're not having to pay something. The government comes in and says, hey, we're going to put this new insulation in your house. Guess what? You didn't have to pay for it. There are programs for that. So people that live in fear of the cities, or everybody cannot move – everybody can't move from a city. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, you can't do it, right? Everybody can't just flee to the hills, right? Because I'm not trying to flee my butt to the dusty hills of Texas. Oh, no, sir. And so what buildings have to be built to code.
Yeah, I'm the complete opposite. Get me out of the city.
So you want to be out of the city.
I don't want nothing
but
to do with the grid. But then, I got a skill set. I didn't have it. I had to develop it. I'm still developing it. But anyway, all right, let's go from that. Now,
right.
how did you get involved before you got, transition it this way. Explain what the Special Olympics is, and then how did you get involved with the Special Olympics?
Special Olympics is its own, it's its own governing body. No one is over that program. You have the regular Olympics and then you have the Paralympics. Those are separate, right? So your audience knows the difference. I've been in Special Olympics since the 90s and I am visually impaired, but I speak well, articulate, those things. And I wanted to be a part of Special Olympics because in the 90s, there was really nothing, even in the early 2000s and so on, there was really nothing for people with disabilities to participate in but the Special Olympics. And so Special Olympics monopolized, they really did. They monopolized the globe for disabled people. They are the biggest organization for people with disabilities. And I wanted to, since a kid, prove that I could do things because, let's be honest, I didn't get picked up on your local basketball team or, and things like that, right? Because people just didn't want to play, just didn't see that I could do anything with glasses on. All the other folks out there didn't play in glasses, right? So they're like, we ain't picking that person. But you have to prove yourself. And the Special Olympics as a child gave me a chance to prove myself and those types of things. And I continue to refine every skill that I was taught in the Special Olympics, from sports to nutrition to working out. And that got more advanced. But the Special Olympics is literally designed for people that have all types of intellectual disabilities, physical disabilities. Mine would be considered physical or terminal because my disability cannot be fixed with modern technology because I have a condition called estropia. Estropia is the condition where the eyes, the muscles aren't strong enough, and so the eyes have a tendency sometimes to stay in one place or what have you. And so, and then the second condition is called astigmatism. Astigmatism, that's where the eyes, they shake, right? And so that's why I don't look at screens, or that's why I don't want to be on computers or small screens, because I have headaches, right? Because you're talking about your vision. Everything ports through that optic or that nerve that runs all the way to the back of the eye has has a lot of nerves, has 2.5 trillion nerves or something like that. And nerves, we don't even have cables that light together like that. We don't even have cables. I think the thinnest cable we've got on the planet is the width of a human hair. Nerves are a lot thinner than the width of a human hair, so you can't put that type of cable in the back of an eye, right, because the width of the nerve is less than the width of a human hair by mass, but or volume. Knowing my eye condition in great detail, this is something that helps people, right? Because you're knowing your own condition to explain on radio waves to people or television. And for me, having this condition means that my eyes will be this way for the rest of my life because they cannot fix it. But also knowing that maybe God put me here for a reason to tell my story, that yes, the Special Olympics did good in my life, and we start with a good foundation and a structure. We call it constructive criticism, right? Yes, they did wonderful and great things for me, right? Great things for me, right? And they gave me a self-esteem and all of these things that you want as a disabled individual, right? And the ability to speak well and those types of things. I did a lot of public speaking for the Special Olympics and things like that. Now, on the back end of my life as an adult, though, that's where you pick up steam because everything's been refined. I even played and ran against the men when I played in because this is another issue I had as an adult in the Special Olympics. A lot of the women thought I was born a man, and they protested to their coaches. And I found myself competing against males. And I didn't tell any of the males out there that I was a woman, because the last time I did that at a meet, the dudes walked off the thing. I don't know why. I'm not a man. They walked out. I was like, where's everybody going? So they just walked off the thing. But when I was in that meet and I was competing against a male, I said, God put me here for such a time as this. And I was, and I have pictures to prove that I was running against males in a state track meet, men. And I said, at the end of the day, God put me here and gave me the tools for a time as that. And at the end of the day, I ran the best race of my life. And I tell people every day, God gives you competition in this life, and my competition in life is to tell folks about my disability and tell my story, and tell my story of how, yes, the Special Olympics, they did these great things, but they also exploited me, right? I don't get paid for public speaking. I don't, you know, the medals, I've had to sell them 2 years ago to survive during the pandemic, right? But most people with disabilities wouldn't even think of doing that because they can't stand out here on the corner. It's Dallas-Fort Worth. It's dangerous. You got to know to keep your head on the swivel. They wouldn't know that. They wouldn't know, you know, hey, you might not want to talk to this car, keep going. You know, they don't know how to decipher stuff. They get snatched out here. So I did these things to survive, right? And at the end of the day, if I know the price of metal, right, I'm going to have the ability to sell it. My grandmother always told me, I don't care what it is, scrape it off and go find out what the value is. And the metals, they were valued, right? And you weigh them or whatever, and you get money for that. And so at the end of the day, I did what I could to survive, because you're not allowed to get sponsorships in the Special Olympics. You're not allowed to get third-party money from the public. So you're essentially a slave. I competed in the world and national games. The public may ask, where did you compete? I competed in the national games in Seattle, Washington, right? Competed there 2018-19, competed that. And also in Dubai, in that area, and competed for the World Games. That was the World Games over in Dubai on a 14-hour flight on United Arab Emirates, right? And everything in my mind, I documented how expensive things were and what, blah, blah, and I studied the province. I didn't just go there to play. I studied where I was. Studied where I was, because everybody should do this when you travel. Don't just go there to travel. Get on the internet and see what's over there. It's like standing in a tree, right? When you can see for miles. I remember telling this dude, I said, hey, brother, forget standing on the ground. I said, you can see no people coming for miles up here, right? Because that's what you want in this life. You want to be able to see for miles. When I was homeless, I would climb up into a tree. Why? Because if I build my foundation up high, I can also see what's coming at me, right? And people would and they would laugh at me, right? Because when they're like, you're in a tree, you're going to sleep in a tree, what? You know, and sure did, right? And so at the end of the day, the tree of life offers protection. And for me, bankruptcy was a big deal. That offers legal binding protection, right? And I tell people in this life, you understand what the laws provide you in this country, not what somebody says, not what somebody says down the street. What does the law say? The law says in this country, I have the right within U.S. borders, territories, to make money off my image and likeness without being impeded to do so. Meaning what? I should have the money and the right to get that money legally, fair. That's what I'm asking, and Special Olympics never allowed me to do that. I was never allowed to go out here and ask anybody for help. Wasn't allowed to have representation, management, an attorney. Nobody review agreements or contracts. Weren't allowed to leave their office. That's not fair. But I look at how God takes my life from the negative, right, And God is going to use all of those things, including, I believe, bankruptcy, to be able to tell a court or a judge, because I'm a disabled person. And this has never, ever been attempted against the Special Olympics, because most people in their program have no idea how to study. They have no idea how to read the paperwork. They wouldn't even know what chapter to file, for heaven's sakes, because they're disabled, right? And their parents do everything for them. Well, my mom's not here to do anything for me. Why, you may ask? My mom's not here anymore. And so at the end of the day, I lost my mom about a month ago. And so that taught me resiliency, that I have to find help in ways that you may not think. And help can come in many forms. And at the end of the day, I wrote a book to cry out for help. That book is called Swimming Upstream to Realize the Dream. I wrote that book. I would like you to look it up, and I would like you folks to purchase a copy, because that book tells my story in great detail. And the rules for Special Olympics, they have to change. And they create homelessness by not allowing us to profit off of our image. They create all these things that he talks about. That is real. But what I'm talking about is an organization that is built to make us homeless. Right, I'm fortunate because I was able to study federal programs. But most people with disabilities could not function on their own, and they couldn't live in this type of apartment I live in. Because I tell you what, right now, they're not going to come knocking on your door reminding you to go pay your rent. Amen. You have to have discipline and know these things. Right? You have to understand what's on that lease given to you. They're not going to read it to you. Right? So these are all things that the world opens up to you, that you have to be responsible for you, and nobody else is responsible for you. I'm 37 years old. I don't know how old you are. I'm sure, is it appropriate to, is it okay to ask your age? How old are you, sir?
64.
Okay, cool, because the last time I asked a woman her age, she about slapped me. I said, wait a minute, ma'am. I said, I'm asking because we... When you were in a group setting, right, and so people were, you know, saying their ages or whatever for this group, but I noticed some of the older people in the back, the women, nobody in that corner said their age, so I was like, I don't know, you know, I'm not an older woman, so I'm like, I'm a woman, I'm going to shout my age out, so I was shouting my age out, and so it is different with women and you asking their age, so I just wanted to make sure that was appropriate, but when you are a certain age and you go through these things of homelessness or any of that, right? You know, you said you're over 50 years old, right? So you know a lot of stuff that I don't. But experience can help accelerate a lot of the stuff that I may not have known. And for me, studying is it's helping me so much to understand rules, laws, and regulations. Anybody, go Google me, Ashton Smith Special Olympics. Golden Ashton is my cash app. At the end of the day, I know that in my pocket someday I'm going to be prosperous. And I'm going to be prosperous because I speak that into existence first. I speak that into existence first. Right? And being prosperous is my hope. And with work and dedication, I will be able to separate myself from the Special Olympics, because I'm never going back to a program that will not allow me to make money off my image. That's never going to happen. And I believe by telling the truth and being honest to the public about how I'm being exploited and used in that program, and how people all around me are trying to help me put a stop to that, and I'm grateful for a person in my life that I'm working with right now as we speak, Pastor Don Jr., CEO, I'm grateful for him, seriously, because he understands my story, and he understands the vitality and seriousness of my story, right, that I have the right to make and have money. I shall not be told because I'm disabled or what have you that my life doesn't matter. I've dealt with racism and other things in the Special Olympics. People can Google Special Olympics Texas Confederate flag. That's openly supported out here. And when you're a woman of color, there's not really much you can do unless you ask for legal help, right, and people who understand laws and regulations that will take your case, like in my instance, yes, I want that and need that, right? And at the end of the day, that will come too when you cry out for it. My grandmother said a closed mouth, what? It didn't get fed over here, you know, paraphrasing, but at the end of the day, we must open our mouths, speak the truth, and speak fairly. It's not to bash a program.
Let me ask you this. Your swimming equipment, you know, whatever equipment, you know, mm-hmm. suit, cap, and all that, you have to buy that yourself?
Yes, uniforms. Yeah, I had to pay for uniforms, and I tell you, that's expensive. Racing suits are about $500 from Arena Swimwear. You know, we're talking about racing Olympic style swimsuits. They're $500 a piece, and that's expensive. And then on top of it, I had to pay for hotels, food, transportation. I never got reimbursed for anything. Special Olympics talked about creating a trust in my name to pay for these things. That was also a lie. They didn't create anything.
Now, what if,
right?
Now, what about this idea? Let's say if you mm-hmm. came out with your own signature line of swimwear, could you sell that to other swimmers?
You could, but there are strict fabric qualifications in the Olympics. There are certain textiles you can't use, rubbers, all of that. So you better know the regulations if you're going to make racing suits. It's mm-hmm. heavily regulated for various reasons, because Michael Phelps, if you guys study swimming, he had on this space age suit that gave him an advantage because of the textiles and woven together fabrics, almost like a carbon effect or this kind of slick surface. And so they said those types of suits were banned. So you really have to study that, and it's very expensive to send that to study and trial. You know, you better make sure you know what you're doing before you get into swimsuits and stuff like that.
Now, we've got some calls
for
you. So, let's hold on, Ashton. We got some calls for you. Let's take one at 303 area code. Your mic is open.
Yeah, this is Johnny calling from Denver. Listen to your story. It sounds a lot like the NBA, like before they go pro. The association is making all the money, and they can't. And I guess last July or something like that, they changed that around. And then we have a group here in Denver called Family. It's like PHAMALY, and they set up this theater group. In the beginning, you know, they weren't paying anybody anything to go rehearse these musicals, and now they're paying them like a stipend to rehearse. So it just seemed like not enough of us who are disabled have stepped up and said, hey, you know, we need some compensation because we do all this training, we buy all this equipment, we pay for a hotel, and we need some help, because with 70% of us being unemployed, we may not be that 30% that has a job and can pay for all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yep.
So I hear what you're saying, because
what kind of numbers are there in this? Because this sounds like my first exposure to Special Olympics went back when I was in college. But it's really grown since then, because that was back in the 70s. So about how many disabled athletes participate in, you know, Special Olympics?
In Texas, they have about 55,000 athletes. That varies from state because that's based on population and stuff. But you do the math, 55,000 athletes, they're able to generate, at least in this area, they generated $200,000 in 1 month. You have various restaurants and stuff that sponsor them. I think Texas Roadhouse or something like that is a big sponsor. I believe, what is it, Jimmy John's or one of these sub places, and one of them was a sponsor of them, a commercial, you know, that they play talking about let these athletes rise, and all the donations, you know, were supposed to go to help the athletes. It's all a scam. It's a 50-year joke. I studied the program as I became older. I started studying them, and when they really kicked me out the program in 2019, the studying got really serious to the point I knew I had a legal case. I just have to find somebody to take my case, because at the end of the day, I'm getting nothing for the 10 hours a day that I put in, the labor, the work. It's not okay to put in this type of work hours on end, and I'm relegated to study the financial system of the government so I can survive and live, and I'm relegated to moving furniture or doing demolition work. Those are jobs that I've had to do with no air conditioning. No, I want to come home to AC. I'm not, you know, seriously. So, you know, you do backbreaking and serious work, and it's changed my body physiologically and all of that stuff. I'm bigger and stuff. And it'll do that to you. And at the end of the day, I've had to have surgery on my body and, you know, and stuff. And Special Olympics never cared. I got a concussion in 2014, and all they did was laugh at me, right? They didn't do anything, never showed up to the hospital. My mom had to drive me in the back of a pickup truck because they wouldn't call the ambulance for me, right? These are all documented, medically documented things. Nobody from the Special Olympics came in 2014. When I messed up my shoulder in 2020 and had to have a scope on my shoulder, they claimed that I lied and made that up, but the hospital verified that I did not. I actually did have surgery on my shoulder, and that's verifiable. Because at the end of the day, I did everything in my power as an athlete to get law involved. I even went to the police about an athlete who threatened to take my life, and the Special Olympics celebrated that by kicking me out of the program and telling me I'm not allowed to talk to the police. Wait a minute, the police, and I'm having an athlete that's allowed to talk about me racially over the internet? No, sir.
You know,
no,
listening to both of you, I'm about to throw out, it's probably not an original idea, but it's eventually somebody will probably do it. The NBA has slightly over, they got about maybe 565 players in the NBA, and that's a multi-billion-dollar sports cartel. The NFL,
right.
National Football League, has a little over 1,600 professional athletes, and that's a professional football cartel. The Special Olympics, and I did not know this until you guys came on here today, have over 5.5 million athletes. Here, I'm just throwing this out there because I'm a fan of LeVar Ball. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him.
Yeah.
And I think the NBA players should do this as well, particularly the NBA players as well as the NFL player, but definitely the NBA players. Organize and start your own professional league. Or leagues, because the money is
they're
out
using
there. I
these
didn't realize
people.
You're making billionaires. 5.5 million? Yeah. That's a lot of people.
Yep.
And
right, and they're making money
the
off
NBA
of,
is less than 1,000 people.
Right. See the math? Follow the math.
Yeah.
And that's what I tell people. The math shall set you free, because having that much, we say mass by volume. What is mass by volume? That means if I'm filling a tank full of water, it's going to complete the volume in the tank. At the end of the day, that's what Special Olympics is. It is mass by volume, and we are forced to raise our own money even to go to World and National Games. Look it up, Special Olympics fundraising kit. Not lying.
Right, yeah, you
we
see,
have to beg for money.
Yeah, because when I was in college, now this is back in the 70s, okay. I went to college on a basketball scholarship. I'm 6'8", so I'm taller than you. Okay. So we did some volunteer work, and it was a bunch of these were like little kids. So I just thought it was, you know, these are the kids and this is what Special Olympics was out about. But then they've really developed since then. Okay.
Yep.
So Special Olympics, that is. So
yes.
You guys got a serious industry there. Now, are you guys familiar with the guy LeVar Ball?
No, I've heard of him.
Let me break it down. Yeah, yeah. LeVar Ball is the father of two NBA players, LaMelo Ball, which is the youngest Ball brother, Then he's right. got Lonzo Ball, which is oldest Ball brother. Lonzo plays for the Chicago Bulls. LaMelo plays for the Charlotte Hornets. And then he got a middle son, who LiAngelo, who is in the NBA G League or D League. It's like semi-pro league. I mean, they get paid, though. So LaVar Ball, prior to his first son getting drafted in the NBA, he started Big Baller Brand, which you can look it up online right now. It's got a website, Wikipedia page, the whole nine yards. And LaVar Ball's whole thing was, you know what? We're going to have our own shoe. We're not going to go to Nike or Reebok or anything like that unless they bring us a partnership deal that we can live with. But that didn't happen. So, anyway, he's got two. Now, I'm saying all this to say this. There is a lot of intellectual property, and I'm talking about shoes. Put it this way, Ashton, what, and I know I'm preaching to the choir. The equipment that you were wearing and use, and because basically you're a walking billboard, whoever you put that suit on for.
Yeah, saying,
some of you get together and start your own sports league or whatever, and separate from that, from especially because if you don't do it, somebody else is going to do it. Okay.
Oh, I'm doing public speaking, right? Because my goal is to publicly speak my story for real.
Right. And because you guys, if the NBA, because there's only so many teams in the NBA, there are less than 600 players in the NBA, and all of those owners are basically billionaires. They're billionaires. Forget about LeBron James and what they make, and they make good money. But they're billionaires. Not even 40 teams. So now if there's over 5 million Special Olympics people, you guys are making people uber rich.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. You got CEOs making bank off of six figures while we sit here living on the streets or sleeping in trees. Special Olympics, it's a scam, and they need to be federally investigated and reported to the IRS because they wouldn't even feed me when I asked for food. I had to go across the street to a gas station. They wouldn't feed me, but I'm swimming for y'all all day, but you won't feed me anything, right? And, and transportation, I had to pay bus services and stuff to take me to practices and things, and and they don't care. Like, they don't care, and I had to report doctor's notes to coaches. I'm like, no, if this is voluntary, I shouldn't have to call you at all if I miss a practice. Why y'all up all up on me like that? Sent the police to go ahead.
Hold on, Ashley. Yeah, 303, what's your comment?
I'm going to ask a question. Like, do you know anybody who's still on the inside, which now that we have these camera phones, it'd be good to, like, document that, because if it's happening to you,
right,
I'm sure it's probably happening to those other ones, and, like, a picture and a video is worth a thousand words.
Yeah, probably investigators can do that.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
you guys
need to
organize
blind.
And just start your own league.
I'm blind.
Start your own thing.
I take my camera all the time, but I understand that, the organizing, but maybe you can get them on the negotiating table, like this group called Family, and now, you know, they're getting,
right,
like this stipend for the people that come in and do these theater plays, and
right,
get them to see it your way and go that route. And if that doesn't work, then go the route of, you know, developing your own
league. I tried for 2 years to negotiate with the Special Olympics. They told me N-word by. I was called the N-word by the CEO. The CEO, you know, he's a public figure. His name is Tim Martin. Everett King and Dalton Hill were people that came to my home where I live at, to a restaurant, right? You know, a restaurant out here. And essentially I have that recording where they kicked me out the program, and I'm telling them, wait a minute, but I'm defending myself from an athlete who threatened harm upon my life, and I get kicked out of a program for going to the police department about it. Those things cannot happen when you are in a place of authority to keep me safe. I told them there is nothing contractually that I signed giving up the right to be safe, period. I said, I don't care what y'all say. And they've never given me back any contracts, agreements, nothing, right? Because my grandmother's gone, my mom's gone, so they feel like they can just run over me because there's no one here that can sue them or do anything to them because they're this big bad thing. And they do things to people and abuse people, right? I've been abused by people in that program. I've been physically assaulted by people. You know, I've had people physically say over the internet that they would punch me, right? And they're okay with that because they don't do anything about it. A closed mouth or inaction means what? That means silence. And silence is quiet. And quiet doesn't work when a person is crying out for mercy upon their life. Quiet doesn't work when a person goes to authorities and you're kicked out of a program and banned for life. I was told that I had an indefinite suspension. What does that mean? They can tell me when to come back. No, I don't want that kind of control exerted over my life. So I started speaking out to the Dallas Morning News and Dallas Observer. Y'all can Google Ashton Smith, Dallas Observer, right? Ashton Smith, Dallas Morning News, because I spoke out about the depression and things that I dealt with in their program and have to take counseling for. That's unacceptable. I said y'all breed homelessness and depression upon people's lives. That is what their program is, because behind the scenes, people don't know that folks are abused. That article, Special Olympics, Texas Confederate flag, that dude had something sexual happen to him, and they wrote an article about it. But Special Olympics is so big that they just keep juggering ahead. But see, I'm an athlete, right? So it changes the floor, right? It changes the game, right? At the end of the day, I'm an athlete, and I can speak how the program runs from an athlete's perspective with integrity because I speak well, right? I can hold my words. I can pronounce words very well, and I can speak about atrocities and things that have happened to me in that program, right? And so at the end of the day, you use every legal process, including bankruptcy, to tell people these things are happening to me. And that is what Special Olympics does not like. They don't want me telling a story about their program, then pay me to stop telling the story. If you're not going to pay me, the story continues for the rest of my life because I am going to tell the story to any and everybody that will listen. They need to be federally investigated. Like I said before, contact the IRS, contact the charitable trust in your state. Right, I contacted the charitable trust here in Texas. What is the charitable trust? That is a governing arm that governs the expenditures of charities, right? That arm governs the expenditures of charities and what they say they do with the money, right? If Special Olympics announces on their website that it's free to participate, it's not. Why am I having to raise money on the back end? If I don't have to show a doctor's note, why am I now forced to do that if it's voluntary? It's not. It's run like a cult. They have this nice image and facade on the outside, this soft, nice image. But on the inside, it's very porcupine-like, right? Very, very tough, right? This image on the inside, it's very jagged and rough, right? And God, for me in my life, God is the reason that I feel like I'm able to get through this stuff overall and be able to stand here and talk to you because God says what? I am created in his image. I'm not created to be a slave for a program. And when I understood that verse in the Bible, it was like a weight, amen, fell off of my shoulder, right? Because I now go to the word of God. Not what a program says about me. What does the laws in this country say I can do, and what does the word of God say I can do? The word of God says, I what shall not leave you or forsake you. A program will leave you or forsake you, but God said, I shall not. And so if God says, I shall not, I shall stand on the solid rock I stand on, solid rock I stand on, foundation. And that is what I want my story to be, is a solid rock foundation story that people can go and Google and look up and say, this woman's telling the truth. This woman doesn't get anything for what she does. I've done speaking engagements for the Special Olympics and never got a dime while they make thousands of dollars off my voice on stations such as ESPN, NBC5, Swim Swim Magazine. And do you think I get anything for these things? I get nothing. I get nothing but a thank you. No, I'm tired of my image being exploited when federal laws have changed, allowing me to do so. I'm 37 years old, and I've never made a dime while being exploited since the 90s. When I was 18 years old, I should have been able to be paid because I was no longer part of the UIL. The UIL rules and regulations state this: once you graduate upon graduation or completion of high school, right, you are allowed to what? Profit or make money off your image, period. That is in the UIL rules and regulations for the state of Texas, right? It applies to most school districts. It may be called something else, but look at your school district rules. Once your child turns 18 or they graduate high school and they got that diploma in their hand, they can go make money off their image. Special Olympics kept telling me that I wasn't allowed to do that.
Hold on a minute. Hold on.
Sure.
We got another caller for you. 602 area code. Your mic is open.
Mic check.
Yeah, 602. Your mic is open.
I hear you, LA. Can you hear me? Mic check.
Yeah, well, we can hear you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Shout out to Ashley Smith. You're doing a great job. This is a wonderful interview.
Thank you
for bringing on your show and bringing attention to the atrocity that they did with the Special Olympics. They basically taking a likeness and images, making meanings off of it, not paying them. So we like to tell the world about it. I mean, anybody on the side of my voice, y'all got to get the story on your station. It's really big. It's going to be all over news, everywhere. So you got it first, that way. I want y'all to follow suit. You got to tell people, because if we don't educate each other, mm-hmm. we will never know. With that being said, I'm going out the way. Thank you so much for opening my line.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for calling in, Pastor Don. Just listening to him, like the same thing. I put it this way. My position on it, even before she called in, when, what's his name? The dude that was, Colin Kaepernick. You know, I'm from the Master P school of thought, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You got enough millionaire athletes, get together and form your own league. Have your own rules, you know, which includes the intellectual property. Because that's where the ball is going eventually anyway. Right now, like the NCAA, they've adjusted some of their rules where, you know, some of the top athletes, you know, they might get some extended publicity from whatever their sport might be. They have a right to now earn money from their image or whatever. I'm saying, you know what, just take over the whole thing. Start, get your own leagues going, make your own rules and regulations up, and then start teaching. Now, what you're doing, Ashton, is good. You're speaking. That's your part in this whole thing right now. I'm not saying try to tackle everything, but the NFL players, there's enough black players to start their own league. The NBA, 70-80% of the NBA are black millionaires. So there's enough.
Yeah.
Now the money might not be on the table that you can travel NBA star right now, because a lot of NBA teams now have the NBA started with the NBA that we know today, the National Basketball Association that we know today, started with just 8 teams. That's it, 8.
Mm.
And when they started, because I know through, I probably wasn't born when they started, but when I was in high school and college, they were catching airplanes just like everybody else. Now they have their own private planes, and the teams are worth billions, you know, for how many 35, 40 teams they got. But start your own thing, because when you that's when you were throwing out those numbers, I said, while you two were talking, I said, I looked up how many players in the NBA. And it's a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of what you guys got. Then I looked at the NFL.
Yeah.
So keep on doing your thing on thinking. I mean, not thinking, but speaking. And then probably some things, some satellite groups need to start off with teaching kids about the law, right? Because basically matter of fact, if I can find a clip in here, and Ashton, I want to have you back. I got a sports attorney out of Washington, D.C. I want to bring you back.
That's
on with
what
him
we
one
need.
Day. Because
it's sad.
You're wearing when you're wearing your sports gear, matter of fact, break item by item, when you're at a swim meet, name the articles of clothing that you're using.
I'm using a parka, which I had to pay for. Parkas can run about $200. That keeps you warm. I have to wear my sweatsuit or suit that they give us, but I have to pay for that. That's also another $75, so $100 for that plus tax. I have to buy my racing swimsuit, which is another $500 plus tax, $500, $600 plus tax. I also have to buy swim goggles. Those are $35 plus tax. I have to buy my swim cap, which is also another $30 for a swim cap plus tax plus the shampoo and things that go with getting the chlorine.
Oh, okay. All right.
Hair.
All right. Let's start right there. We got about 7 items there. I want y'all to listen to this, and then we're going to come back and comment on it.
Brother Greg Dredd with me, brother. Got that pure cake, no butter, no sugar. Asiatic, straight like my brother's soul. Yes, indeed. 7-Up cake, we got pound cake. And we...
some of that pound cake.
Yes, indeed, brother. There you go. Thank you, brother. You have a good day today. Salam.
Today I begin a new life. For I am the master of my abilities, and today is going to be a great and beautiful day.
What?
I said, today I begin a new life, for I am the master of my abilities, and today is going to be a great and beautiful day.
Pillows, goose down, $35.
P, you a buyer or a seller?
What? Videos, homie. Videos, DVD, CD, Masterpiece, Charlie's Angel.
Look at yourself.
How many millionaires you got on, bruh? I count at least 3. Man, what the fuck are you talking about? P, look around, man. You see what I see? I see money. Look at my man over there selling t-shirts. Brother over there selling pies and papers. Cake man over there. Everybody moving, making money, right? While we standing still being broke. I figured all this shit out, man. All this. This whole world moves forward through transactions. Commerce, nigga. The exchange of goods and services. All the real baller successful folks are sellers. And all the broke-ass people playing catch-up are buyers. I ain't trying to go out like that, Pete. I'm going to be a seller. I'm going to get my own business. Change the game.
Now, the reason why I asked Ashton to name all these items, and I'm glad you brought up shampoo also, Ashton, is because basically your walk, when you swim, there's a million, I count about at least 7 millionaires that you are wearing some kind of way. At least that. So, I'm glad you're speaking up on it, and it's like I said, when I first in college that weekend, you know, Special Olympics has really developed since then, really developed.
Oh, it's huge!
So,
I mean, they go to fancy hotels.
It's bigger
huge
than the NBA.
It's right? It's huge. People don't realize that it's like We're told because we're disabled, we don't need money or a place to live or my grandma going to take care of me. That's what they teach these athletes, and they get out here in the real world and get put out of apartments because they believe people are going to take care of them. No, man, like, teach people the truth. Teach me about credit, amen. Teach me about dividends. Teach me about home ownership. No, y'all, they want me to be, you know, they want me to be incompetent or archaic, right, is the word used for today, archaic. I don't want to be archaic. I want to be up to speed, up to light, and up ahead, right? That's what my grandma used to tell me. I want to be up to speed, up to light, and up ahead. And that means I want to keep my train moving at full speed in my life until I get where I need to go. Because you could have people taking you there, but you grab their hand as tight as you can and you go, right? And at the end of the day, that is what I'm having in my life. If I get a sports attorney, that'll make everyone's lives a lot easier because companies will be able to sponsor me for real, right?
Now,
because they don't think that I have
what are some of the brand names of the articles of clothing that you wear when you swim?
Arena Swimwear, TYR, Speedo, you know, those are the top brands that I wear. Even Michael Phelps, I wore his brand, right? So, you know, these are multi-million-dollar companies, and I get nothing. I get nothing. I mean, I was on ESPN twice, right? And I get nothing. I told ESPN, no, I'm not getting nothing for this. I come home at the time to poverty. Poverty. I said, guys, no, I'm coming home to poverty. Poverty. It's not okay. When you tell me you're going to uplift me and bring me out of this, no, you put me further into that. And that's not okay.
Ashton, are you available tomorrow morning again, same time?
Sure.
I want to bring you back on tomorrow. We want to dedicate the whole live stream. Because I got a friend of mine I went to high school with. He's a sports attorney. I want to bring him on.
Does he operate
well,
in
because,
Texas?
See,
do you know?
What you're talking about is they're billions being made. Being made.
Right. Exactly. They get sponsorships by the NFL, Walmart, Amazon, and the list goes on and on and on. Texas Roadhouse and all these sponsors sponsor them while we sit here and get nothing. We're having to sell medals. I had to cut the ribbons off my state medals and sell them for scrap. I kept the World Games medals and National Games medals for proof that I was in the program. But other than that, all the state stuff, I sold it because I have to pay bills. That's life. You know, you have to, and it's like they took away my hopes and dreams from me and just snatched them away from me. And it's like, I'm 37 years old. Where am I going to go compete now? No,
let me
so
ask you
now
this,
God said,
Ashton,
yes, sir.
Now, with the Special Olympics, we know we got swimming. And what other sports?
What other sports did I play?
Well, yeah, let's start with that. What other sports did you play?
I did bocce, right, which is an old-timey sport. It's probably been around probably since the 16th century, you know, played that, right? Bocce, you guys can look that up. You roll a ball to a palina, a white ball. That's the pronunciation, palina. And then I played basketball, flag football, swimming,
now,
track and field for them. I played.
The Special Olympics have a basketball event?
Yes. It's huge, yes. They have 13 different sports. Yes, over 13 different sports. They have equestrian. They have all that. They have even winter sports. They use these athletes. They don't pay us.
Being equestrian, that's an expensive sport there.
Right, and these rich white folks can pay for it, right? They got cycling. They got all this stuff. And when you look at the image that they sent out, Google Special Olympics Texas 2022, it ain't nothing but white folks. Because that is who can afford to go after a pandemic. Black people can't afford to go to this. And the picking of people is so one-sided. I'm better than anybody that they have, but I only get picked until I'm in my 20s. But I've been in Special Olympics since the 90s. It's biased. It's a very biased process. how they pick people. They only pick their favorites to go, and some people get chosen to go year after year.
Swimming, because
it's a very biased process.
Yeah, with swimming, I know with the regular Olympics, it's I can't even name one black. I'm sure there have been. I'm just not up on it.
Yeah, it's one black lady, but it ain't swimmers. Too many black people. It's like 1%. I did the math on that, too, like 1%, if that, of black folks. And it's sad because black people don't see people who look like them, but I was the only black person that Special Olympics had that was a great swimmer. And I said, you know, I want my life back. And Special Olympics, they do, they owe me a public apology on television because I did nothing wrong but go to law enforcement about the abuse I suffered. There's nothing in a contract that says I have to put up with verbal or physical abuse. Sorry, they're mad because I can verbalize. I've been abused, and I have.
Right.
And and it's like I got to find a sports attorney that can take my case because I have mounds of evidence, paperwork, and thumb drives here in my house. Because I know what I stand on. Again, the solid rock I stand on. Right. And at the end of the day, the solid foundation is the truth of my story. And the truth that my story is the fact that they don't pay me. I dealt with these other things, but the crux and truth of my story is this upon the mountaintop. I do not get paid, and they need to be federally investigated. That is what needs to be happened, and Special Olympics needs to be shut down because they're not going to stop me from going over public airways. They even threatened to take my computer and stuff from me. For what? Because I'm speaking out over the Internet, which is not grandfathered in. Anyone has access to the Internet. You can't tell me not to go to the press or grandfathered newspapers. Grandfathered means that they have been hewn into the governing bodies of the United States. That is what that means. And if I can go to a newspaper and tell my story, who are you to tell me I cannot? That is what that law applies for, is to protect people like me who want to use avenues such as the news. No entity shall what? Interfere with what? You going to a news station. And Special Olympics is playing interference. They don't want me to prosper. They don't want me to have anything so they can make money off my story. Use my dead grandmother on NBC5.
No, I'm glad you wrote that book.
Did we get anything? No. Google Ashton Smith NBC5. It's there. Living Blue in Texas, Ashton Smith, it's there. People studied their program, and it is an exploitation engine is the words we're going to use for that, exploitation engine. And that engine must be stopped because it's not right. And I feel like I'm speaking for all, you know, 5 million athletes because most of them can't speak. That's what's sad. Most of them cannot speak or talk to you even on a radio station because they don't even know how to interact, I guess you can say, on the radio. That's a problem. So these people are entrapped because they don't know. Go ahead.
Go ahead, 303. Matter of fact, 303, give me your first name so I won't stop calling you 303.
This is Johnny.
All right, Johnny. Okay. Give us your comment, Johnny.
Yeah. It sounds like there's a group of people that they're always taking advantage of the ones who can't speak, or the ones who can't articulate. There was some this Fauci guy. I mean, he put a grant out there to study animals, and that they didn't want to hear them cry out, so they clipped their tongue so they wouldn't be able to hear the sounds, so they can continue to like doing experiments on them. So it seems like there's this group of people, and when they get in power, they say, what can we do where we can take advantage of somebody and they can't speak out? And then somebody comes up like Ms. Ashley here, and she can speak out, and it's like, uh-oh. It's time to scramble and try to find a way that we can submerge that voice because, you know, we're having it so good. Now somebody's going to disrupt it.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm getting out of this.
It's true.
Now, Johnny, are you involved with Special Olympics or any kind of way?
No, no. I mean, I've had friends that have been involved with it, and you know, my thing is, you know, I got into radio and broadcasting, so I wasn't too much of an athlete. I mean, I would be running, I would be the last one in the race.
Okay.
When I started competing with the brothers, when I was competing with the white boys, could beat them all the time. But when I got with the brothers, it's like, I knew that wasn't my field. So,
right.
So I went another direction.
Okay.
But, it just sounds like, just from listening to just things that have gone on in this world, it just, I mean, even when, you know, back in the day, you know, they would terrorize, you know, us because we had no power, no voice. And then when we got a voice, then they said, wait a minute, you know, now you want to compete with us? Yeah, we want a piece of that pie. We can see it. We want a piece of it. You know?
Yeah.
So that's what that sounds like in this case. And man, you know, I'm going to be praying for it. And I know something good is going to come out of this because somebody has to speak up for the ones who have no voice.
Well, like I said, tomorrow we're going to look at the bit. We're going to bring Ashton back, and you're welcome back too as well. And
right.
We're going to look at the business side of that because I looked up just briefly what Special Olympics took in, which is over $100 million. But the
right,
you know, but when Ashton, that's why I asked her to name the clothing, and that's why I played that piece from the movie Baby Boy, because essentially everything that she wears, she's a walking billboard during those meets for millionaires. Or in some cases, billionaires. I haven't looked up all the numbers yet, but total all up, she's actually a billboard for in conglomeration at least over $1 billion. So and that's just one.
Right,
person.
and they ESPN is $1 billion. When you look at the interview I did and you see the views they got, I got no hits on my social media. I got no following, and none of my social media is monetized, so no one is ever hearing anything I sell, including my book I posted on my social media, but it does nothing because it's not monetized. I'm lucky if five people view my page because the algorithm is such, and Special Olympics does not allow me to use social media to make money. And it's like, no, I got to be taught how to monetize and get that blue check mark. Teach me that. That's what I want to know.
Yeah, tomorrow
that's what they
get the two lawyers on here. There's a lot of like I say, there's so many industries that you matter of fact, I'm gonna see if I can get my mentor on the phone tomorrow. But there's a lot of industries that are connected to sports.
Oh, it's a lot of industries connected to the Special Olympics. Oh, it's a lot.
Right.
And, you know, at the end of the day, when you try to speak out, like I've been blocked from social media with the Special Olympics. They've pretty much taken down my image. I'm like, well, it's too late now. Y'all don't use my image. Now y'all want to take it down as if nothing happened. No, my image is still up.
Right.
You know, they took it off their websites, but I told them they don't. It's too late. I've been used. Now y'all want to keep me out of a program when I'm talking about I've been physically abused by people. And y'all allow this stuff to happen. Grown adults to attack me over my social media. September 18th, 2019. When you look at my Facebook page in 2019 and stuff, you can see it. How I cried out on there, how I was abused and stuff. And they told me to stop talking about it and had my pages and stuff censored and stuff by Facebook. No, man, because I'm sitting here speaking out. And I've been abused by these people. That has to change. It's not okay for me, right, at the time to have to live on government programs. That was not okay. Period. And people have come into my life and they are working with me like Pastor Don, Junior CEO, you know, the Elite 300 winning team members, shout out to them. You know, I'm grateful for that because that is on time. Why is that on time? Because my mom's not here anymore, right? So at the end of the day, I have to fight like, you know what, to survive, to live. And now I have that can help me fight back. that's not going to allow me to be exploited. But the biggest thing I need in order to get the engine to crank up the full speed, we talking about full speed horsepower, 1,500 horsepower, we moving, brother. Okay, that under the hood, you moving. All right, that's enough thrust to push your car down there, okay? At the end of the day, I want thrust in my life. That is what I want, something that can hit the hammer, right, and break the ice. And a lawyer can do that because a lawyer can go into a courtroom. I can know all the stuff that I know about the Special Olympics, but I'm not a lawyer. I need somebody that can take what I know and get it in front of a judge. And that's enough information to shut their program down. There will never be Special Olympics anymore when I go to a courtroom and present how they exploit people. They sit here and lie on these websites talking about they give people money or they help the athletes. No, you don't. Because when I sit here and ask y'all to help me buy uniforms, you told me I was 18 years old and grown and can buy it myself. That is what the Special Olympics told me. But I ain't allowed to go ask anybody for money either. That's not okay either. So I was literally cornered,
yeah,
having to do odd jobs.
Yeah, tomorrow we're going to talk about ways we'll put that all
help
out there
me.
Tomorrow. All right, so what we'll
you
do,
should.
People, tomorrow we're going to have a sports session on this because Special Olympics, I did not realize it was that kind of a revenue maker, and it's got
it
over
is.
Five.
Jeez.
It dwarfs. All right, Special Olympics has, I'm going to freeze the number at five. Hold it, let me, I'm making sure because I don't want to, don't nobody go nowhere. Special Olympics. What did I, hold it. The number of people, number of athletes in Special Olympics. Okay. It has over 5.5 million people. All right, so let's put it at 5 million. 10%.
Right.
Of 5 million is 500,000, and 10% of 500,000 is 50,000. Now, that's 1%. So that's 50,000. There are less than 1,000. There are less than 600 people in the NBA, and they take in billions. And there are less than 1,600 players in the NFL, National Football League. So Special Olympics dwarfs those two entities that basically
right.
they're two. The NBA is a sports cartel, and the NFL is also a sports cartel as well, but they're not regulated. Okay, and basically, people who become billionaires—that's how they become billionaires because they get into things that are pioneer industries where there's little or virtually no regulation at all from the government. And you can make up your own rules, okay? So with Special Olympics, like I said, Special Olympics has a lot more, participation. It dwarfs the NFL, the NBA, the NBL, and probably the NHL, National Hockey. It dwarfs all of those combined. Okay, but they're also making a lot of revenue on that as well. So we're going to go on that, and we're going to take off from where Ashton, briefed
right.
us today. So thanks, Ashton, for bringing. Well, you know what? That no wonder people are going to end up homeless because, like I said, what the items that you
right.
are wearing. $500, that's somebody's rent. A car.
Yeah, that's
groceries.
Rent. You know what I'm saying? And that's why you're bankrupt. You know what I mean? I told them, I said, y'all left me legally bankrupt. It's like money, for other things. It went to Special Olympics. 10 hours a day of my life was dedicated to that, right? I
and
even stopped full-time, playing.
That's a full-time job.
Right. And it's like they sitting here and I didn't even go to church on Sundays because I was so exhausted, right? And tournaments and things. And it's like, no, man. So it's like at the end of the day, I gave up my religious stuff, all my stuff to be a part of a program that gave me scrap metal, right? And that has to change. I'm 37 years old and I'm literally having to start over all my speaking videos. They destroyed them so I couldn't get a job. Go ahead.
If you don't mind sharing with us, you don't have to, but only if you want to. How much did you say you sold one of your medals?
Yeah, the medals, you know, you probably get $3 or something for them or something like that for two or something like that. But it's hard because you have to survive.
Right.
Right, and that's life. And Special Olympics and sports in the middle of a pandemic, I'm not worried about playing no sports. But then they re-ran my image in 2020 talking about social distancing and all that. No, don't run my image, and I'm sitting here with nothing. No, don't be reusing anything of me while I'm sitting here with nothing and no longer in your program in 2020.
Yeah, your image, and that's why I want to bring in, if I can, I'm going to see if I can rope him in for tomorrow, two lawyers.
Can I ask?
Your image is what's known as, one of the things we're going to talk about tomorrow is intellectual property. Your intellectual property,
right,
which is one of your intellectual properties, is your image.
Yep.
Okay. So we're going to talk about that, how to protect that, how to monetize that. And thank you for
bringing
that up.
Me.
Another
question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, you said you're on Facebook. Are there any other people? Because I had a friend that he had spinal bifida, and like he was like a wannabe biker type of guy, and so I knew that, you know, he probably knew how to use the internet. Are you in contact with other people that have been a part of it that do have maybe not as high level?
I was, but their parents told me to stop talking to them. So a lot of their parents controlled on social media, and they blocked me. Yep, because a lot of their parents work for the Special Olympics, and I don't talk to anybody in the Special Olympics because really their parents told me to stop talking to them. A lot of these people, their parents oversee everything they do. And it's sad, and it's like, you know, it's sad, and they're told not to say stuff to me or talk to me, and it's like, no, then I need legal help. I need an attorney. Because I've been shut
out. Well, we're going to be back here tomorrow morning at same time as we did today, 10:30 Eastern Standard Time, 9:30 Central Standard Time, adjust for your local time zones. We're going to cover this, the monetary aspect of it, the legal aspect of it, and then how athletes, what options do they have to monetize themselves. So thank you, Ashton. Thank you, Johnny. Thank you, everybody, for listening. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.
Thank you, man.